It's the WMRA Daily. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Governor Spanberger visits the Harrisonburg area to highlight economic development and transportation initiatives. Our candidate conversations continue with a look at how the 7th Congressional District would change if voters approve the redistricting referendum. And a statewide summit at Blue Ridge Community College brings together people from agriculture and academia to discuss improving Virginia's food systems. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, April 15th. Governor Abigail Spanberger and members of her cabinet visited Harrisonburg and Rockingham County on Tuesday to announce economic development and transportation initiatives. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Under towering grain silos in Linville, the governor, state and county legislators, and leaders of the Virginia Poultry Growers Cooperative announced a $114 million expansion to the grower-owned turkey company, supported by about $2.3 million in state grants. The project includes building a 2 million cubic foot feed mill and is expected to create 146 new jobs. The cooperative's president and general manager, John King, said this is a major development for their poultry farmers.
Reliable, competitively priced feed is one of the biggest factors in whether farms can grow, remain profitable, and be passed on to the next generation.
Agriculture is the number one private industry in Virginia. It is the economic backbone of our Commonwealth.
Governor Abigail Spanberger told WMRA after the event that she has talked with poultry industry leaders about immigration policy, but that was primarily when she was serving on the U.S. House Agriculture Committee, prior to the Trump administration's mass deportation campaign.
Now the worry that exists across the industry that their workforce might face deportation, that there will be limitations on those who come via the H-2A program, or importantly, that those who just might face fear within the community, that they might pull away from the workforce. Reckless and confusing policies that seem to shift on a regular basis can have real negative impacts.
Spanberger also visited Rocktown High School, overlooking the highway, to announce the $219 million Interstate 81 widening project, scheduled to begin in Harrisonburg on Monday. The project is slated for completion in 2032. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We've posted photos from the governor's visit at WMRA.org and on our app. During her visit to the Valley, Spanberger also announced a more than $2.5 million investment in the Harrisonburg-based aircraft engine maintenance startup AeroNimble. The governor's office said the investment will expand AeroNimble's operational capacity and create 51 new jobs in the Shenandoah Valley. Many of the jobs are anticipated to be filled by graduates of Blue Ridge Community College. AeroNimble specializes in maintaining parts and systems that are vital to civilian and military aircraft engine safety. Meanwhile, a finance meeting in Richmond got heated Tuesday morning as Governor Spanberger's Secretary of Finance faced hard questions from senators about revenue missing in the state's budget. Could new taxes on gambling, all but dead legislatively, fill in the gaps? Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
A representative for Governor Spanberger said during the 2026 session there would be no new gaming before a new state commission to regulate it was established, but efforts to create that commission failed. Meanwhile, revenues from new gaming were included in both Senate and House budgets. Now, facing concerns over revenue shortfalls, Charlottesville Senator Cree Deeds asked this at Tuesday's Senate Finance meeting.
You've taken skill games off the table. What's on the table?
Skill games and fantasy sports accounted for about $265 million in the House budget. Notably, fantasy sports were approved. But with skill games out, there's still millions missing. During the pandemic, a ban on skill games was given a reprieve to collect additional tax revenue. And it did. $130 million went to the state. It shows the legislature is unafraid to use gambling as an emergency revenue source. Here's Senate Majority Leader Scott Surivel, whose effort to open a casino in his Northern Virginia district was vetoed by Spanberger, when asked if gambling efforts like that casino could be brought back in the name of state funds.
We haven't talked to the caucus about how to deal with anything she's proposed or how to respond to it, but you know, that's an option.
And here's Botetourt County Republican Delegate Terry Austin, one of the budget negotiators.
I mean, certainly revenues are looked upon favorably, more so than expenditures. And so, you know, I wouldn't rule anything out right now.
But Fairfax area Democratic delegate Paul Krizik, another budget negotiator who carried the now dead Gaming Commission bill, was less interested in the idea. Everything is on the table, he said in a text Tuesday before adding, but it's not a poker table. In Richmond, I'm Brad Cutner.
Governor Spanberger wants to delay the opening of new retail marijuana locations 6 months. Instead of opening in January, they wouldn't start sales until next summer. She's also calling for new criminal penalties, raising concerns from advocates about recriminalization. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
Governor Abigail Spanberger is suggesting several new criminal penalties for the possession and use of marijuana. For example, smoking in public is currently a civil offense punishable with a fine of up to $25. But Chelsea Higgs Wise at the advocacy group Marijuana Justice says she's worried about the governor's amendment to make that a Class 4 misdemeanor.
That's going to impact people that live in public housing that are not allowed to have legal substances in their home. It's going to impact people with no shelter because where are they supposed to consume? And now we are creating more criminal penalties and therefore more criminals just because people are low income or do not have homes.
J.M. Padini at the marijuana advocacy group Virginia Normals says some of the new criminal penalties will target consumers.
Today, the illegal sale of marijuana is criminalized in Virginia, but not the purchase of illegal marijuana. This would roll that back and recriminalize consumers.
Members of the General Assembly who want to reject these new criminal penalties are facing a choice. They can reject her amendments and send back their version of the bill, which is a gamble because she could veto it altogether, or they can attempt a more complicated maneuver to sever individual amendments they don't like and reject those while approving the rest of the bill. The House and Senate are expected to reconvene on April 22nd. Michael Pope.
Spanberger has signed legislation that would remove tax relief for Confederate-related organizations. One of the groups that would be impacted is the United Daughters of the Confederacy, headquartered in Richmond. The legislation would also remove tax exemptions for Confederate-related organizations that were first introduced in 1950, including for the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Spanberger's Republican predecessor, Glenn Youngkin, vetoed similar legislation during his term. Virginia's effort to strengthen protection for immigrant communities, dubbed the Community Trust Agenda, is moving forward, but not without changes from Governor Spanberger. Karis Manzanares with partner station VPM News has more.
Up against a tight deadline Monday night, Spanberger proposed several amendments to immigration-related bills aimed at strengthening protections for immigrant communities. One key bill focused on restricting 287G agreements was lightly amended. The core of this bill, which limits partnerships between local law enforcement agencies and federal immigration authorities, remains intact. But this stands in contrast to two other bills in the package. Measures dealing with immigration enforcement in certain locations like courthouses and polling locations, and the unmasking of law enforcement agents are facing more significant changes from the governor. State Senator Saddam Saleem, a Democrat representing Fairfax, said Spanberger's changes leave the bills toothless.
We may have missed the mark, and I am hoping this is just temporary.
The General Assembly will reconvene on April 22nd to discuss the governor's amendments.
Karis Manzanares reporting. Early voting is underway for a statewide referendum over proposed congressional district maps in Virginia. WMRE's Randy B. Hagee spoke with 8 candidates for the House of Representatives about the redistricting effort. This report is the second in a 4-part series.
Virginia Democrats are hoping to redraw congressional district lines to flip 4 seats blue in the midterms this year. But the party isn't all of one mind about this endeavor. In part 2 of this series, WMRE spoke with 2 candidates from the Shenandoah Valley, Pete Barlow and Ken Mitchell. Pete Barlow is a Valley native who spent more than 15 years working in natural resource and public infrastructure management at Virginia State Parks, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. He now lives on a farm in Augusta County, which is currently in the 6th District. If the proposed maps are approved, though, he'd be in the new 7th District, which some have termed the lobster for its rough T shape. It would stretch from Augusta and Rockingham counties northeast to Fairfax and south to Powhatan. Barlow, who's running for the Democratic nomination, does not support this proposal. He hasn't decided if he would stay in the race if the maps are redrawn.
If we lump in urban areas with our rural neighbors, rural people aren't going to be represented. They haven't been represented for decades, and nothing's going to change if we have urban-led districts that are out of metropolitan areas. The fact that we are trying to engage in partisan gerrymandering, paying career politicians and lawyers to litigate in Richmond, rather than spending those resources on local effective ground games, that's really egregious. And it's not going to build a long-term coalition, and that's what we need.
In the current 6th District, four-term Republican incumbent Ben Klein has consistently won re-election with at least 60% of the vote. Based on WMRA's review of the maps, if the district is redrawn, Klein would technically live in the new 9th. But the Constitution only requires that he live in Virginia, not necessarily the district he's running in. Klein's office did not respond to multiple requests for interviews or clarity on that question. Barlow says a Democratic win in the current 6th would require changing minds and motivating people who typically don't vote.
There's 50,000 people who used to lean Democrat who don't show up at our polls. So that's one side of the coin. The other side is the fact that our neighbors are coming over to realize that we never signed up for an administration that's going to unilaterally tear up our closest trading allies and engage in forever wars abroad, unilaterally terrorize our immigrant neighbors who are the economic backbone of our local industry, but also the cultural backbone of many of our communities and the diversity that we all love.
There are several issues he believes could unify Shenandoah Valley voters.
Our current representative is not standing up for farmers, hasn't done any tangible work to make sure that they are in a more prosperous place with local dairy processing or local beef processing. We need to have a unified approach to natural resource protection and clean air and clean water and small businesses around here. Those are things that we could get a lot of people on board about.
Just north in Rockingham County, Democratic candidate Ken Mitchell is also running in the current 6th district and would be moved to the proposed 7th. After a 24-year military career, Mitchell worked in telecommunications, historic renovation, and civil engineering all over the state. He retired to the Valley 6 years ago and ran against Klein unsuccessfully in 2024.
I think that overall experience, not just in business, but life experience as a father to daughters, a grandfather to 5 grandchildren, that gives me a different perspective on what the future needs to be for this country. I think I am the candidate that can bridge that rural-urban divide.
Two local issues he wants to address as a congressman are Interstate 81 and data centers.
We're doing upgrades for I-81 and widening, and that desperately needs to happen. But my concern becomes you widen it, you're going to put more traffic on it, and it's not going to solve the problem. And as I've talked to a lot of constituents in the area, they're concerned about the bailoff traffic that's coming off of I-81 when there's an accident.
If the new maps are enacted, Republican incumbent John McGuire would also live in the new 7th District, although Cardinal News previously reported he didn't respond to their question about where he would run. McGuire also didn't respond to our request for an interview. So if he decided to stick with the 5th District, it's possible the new 7th would not have an incumbent in the running. Mitchell supports the redistricting proposal from the big picture perspective.
I understand why Virginia is engaged in this. Trump reached out to Texas and said, find me more congressional seats. California stepped in with their referendum and their ballot and passed it. North Carolina, through legislation, Missouri, other states. And the thing I like about it, redistricting and supported in Virginia, is because it will go to the people and the people will decide what they feel is right.
In part 3 of this series, we'll head over to Central Virginia to talk to Salam Bhatti and Tom Perriello. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You can find parts 1 and 2 and our overview of the redistricting referendum at WMRA.org and on our app. A statewide summit last week to improve Virginia's food systems brought together people from agriculture, food aid, and academia. WMRA's Aisha Pirga reports.
We're here today to talk about this idea of resilience, which is really about how our food systems can change and adapt to shocks and disruptions that can be public health shocks, that can be longer term disruptions like policy changes, or both shocks and disruptions like environmental and weather disasters.
Leah Kalinsky-Jones is the Assistant Director of the Center for Food Systems and Community Transformation at Virginia Tech. She is also a research assistant professor at the university's Department of Agricultural Leadership and Community Education. She was a co-host at Connecting for Resilience, a Virginia Food Systems Summit, an event held at Blue Ridge Community College, supported by Virginia Tech and the Virginia Cooperative Extension.
The aim is to really bring people together to think about what are our priorities, what are our actions as it pertains to moving us towards increased resilience in the food systems of Virginia.
She also points to the importance of revising a plan for Virginia's food systems. A collaborative project to improve Virginia's food system was developed in 2010, but Virginia Cooperative Extension, Virginia Tech's Department of Agriculture and Life Sciences, as well as other state agencies and partners.
It has been about 15 years since we had a plan for Virginia's food systems, and that was the Farm-to-Table Plan, which was really well thought out and has seeded a lot of action in Virginia since then.
Past initiatives included conferences and a harvest celebration. Kalinske-Jones says there have been a lot of changes in the state's food systems in those years. She says they hosted listening sessions throughout Virginia and were able to hear feedback about Virginia's food system and how it could be improved.
And we got to hear about strengths and opportunities for our Commonwealth. And today we're bringing those findings and what we learned to the conversation today to help us say, how do we build on this? How do we move together?
Carla Cash is the executive director for the Mid-Atlantic Food Resilience and Access Coalition, also known as MAFRAC. Cash was also the co-host of the conference. Cash says MAFRAC's vision is to build a sustainable food pipeline.
And I feel like the only way we can build that sustainable food pipeline is putting all the efforts into ensuring that our farmers have a succession plan, they have what they need to be able to carry on this food pipeline. We also want to help them with how do they market, when do they market.
In Virginia, the average age of a farmer as of 2022 is around 59. And small farms, which make up the majority of farms in Virginia, are struggling against larger scale competitors. In light of these challenges, Cash believes it's important for farmers to mentor other farmers. Joni Beverly is a former agricultural technician and currently an office coordinator for the Upper Mattaponi Tribe's Agricultural Partners. Beverly is also a citizen of the Monacan Indian Nation. She points to the importance of people with traditional knowledge in farming and preventing food waste. As for how she sees Virginia's food system going forward,
I think policy, we want to get better with that, most definitely. But I do think that we have a lot of amazing people that are working in different capacities in our foodways in Virginia, and I think that's really positive. And I think just having summits like this where you can come together and communicate are really important for strengthening the systems in the future.
Bryce Burrell is a PhD student at Virginia Tech's Department of Agricultural Leadership and Community Education. He's also a student manager of the Indigenous Community Garden at Virginia Tech, as well as a member of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians. He believes it's important to understand the food system as a whole, as well as being aware of the land one is on.
When it comes to stewarding the land and understanding the idea of, like, when you harvest or fish, what are your responsibilities as a land steward person?
While the summit concluded that day, the work to find long-term solutions for resilience in Virginia's food systems continues. For WMRA News, I'm Aisha Virgev.
Learn more about this story and find links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Well, federal tax returns are due today unless you apply for an extension. You have until May 1st to file your Virginia state taxes. Visit tax.virginia.gov for more information on filing taxes, getting an extension, or figuring out what your options are if you miss the deadline to file. Finally today, Virginia Tech's Board of Visitors approved a 2.9% increase in tuition for undergraduate and graduate students at their meeting on Tuesday. Radio IQ's Roxy Todd reports the board also discussed the process of searching for a new president.
At the meeting, President Timothy Sands briefly addressed his upcoming retirement, which he announced last week would happen as soon as the board selects a replacement.
For now, I'm committed to supporting the university and the new president through the coming transition. So in the meantime, there's plenty of work to do. Go Hokies.
Rector John Rockovich said the board plans to hire a consulting firm to help with the search for a new president. The search committee will include board members, a representative from the Alumni Association, and possibly someone nominated by Governor Abigail Spanberger.
I've spoken with the governor about the subject and asked her if she had any people she'd like to add to the committee. And she's thinking about it, and she's going to get back to me when she makes up her mind.
The board put off a vote on another issue connected to on-campus housing. Members were considering ending Virginia Tech's living learning communities so they can reallocate all available on-campus residential hall beds to first-year undergraduate and transfer students. Blacksburg's mayor has spoken out against the resolution, saying it could have a negative impact on the town's housing market if enrollment continues to grow. The Board of Visitors will revisit whether to keep living learning communities at their next meeting in June. I'm Roxy Todd.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy your Wednesday.